Hi, this is Status Check with Spivey, where we talk about life, law school admissions, a little bit of everything. Today, we are going to fine point law school admissions with a long-standing dean of admissions and friend of mine, Ann Perry, who's been the dean of admission at the University of Chicago for 20 years. Ann started right around when I started, maybe a year or two prior, and I didn't realize she got her start at the University of Illinois in student life. But she is one of the luminary admissions deans who's been around for many years, who has seen it all. And we're going to talk a little bit about it all. What's the craziest thing Ann's seen? What she expects for this cycle? Maybe a few surprises here or there, but this is pure admissions at, I hope, a refined and elegant level. And without further delay, let's turn it over to Ann. Hey, Ann, good to see you. It's been a while.
Hi, Mike. How are you?
I couldn't be doing better. I know you were just out in Colorado. I'm sorry I missed you. How was it?
Colorado's just beautiful. You know, it's great to see family who I hadn't seen in over a year. And the mountains just do something to the soul that you can't get that in Chicago. I really liked it. It was fun.
How many personal statements have you read in your career about not climbing to the top of mountains?
A lot.
Yeah.
I don't have the exact count, but it's an interesting topic when they write about it, but I can kind of relate to it after being in the mountains.
If I apply to Chicago Law School, that might be my topic.
Yeah, Mike, you haven't gone to law school yet. When's that going to happen?
That's right. That's right. So I think you went to University of Illinois not once, but twice, right?
I did. I did my undergrad there, and then I went and got my law degree there. Orange and blue. I love them.
Is there like a word for that? Double Illini or something?
Double Illini, and I'm a loyal alum. My niece went there. She just graduated, and I try to get down there at least for one football game and one basketball game every year. I served on the athletic board for six years. So I'm a big Illini fan.
We might do a follow-up podcast on how to serve on athletic boards. We'll stick to admissions. What got you interested in admissions?
So it's an interesting story. It was while I was in law school, my campus job, I was an advisor to student organizations. So I kind of learned about this whole career in university administration. And it was my second year of law school. And so I'm like, I'm still going to finish my law degree. I practiced law for 2 years. But then a job came open on campus for the law school at University of Illinois. And it was alumni relations. So I got that job. They let me live in Chicago. So I went to Champaign probably 3 or 4 times a month. And then after 2 years of that, the dean of students job came open at U of I's law school. And at that time, the position was structured in such a way that you took them from admissions to graduation and everything in between. So that's where I really got my admissions experience and loved it. And I loved everything else I was doing as the dean of students. But admissions was really where my passion was. I loved talking to students. I loved the process. And then the Chicago job happened, and somehow I've been here almost 20 years.
Yeah.
I moved back to the city. I was from Chicago. It was great to get back home to family. But this job, obviously, here is just focused on admissions. And I really have enjoyed it. It doesn't feel like I've been here almost 20 years. Every cycle's different. I love getting to see the students and being on campus. I feel it keeps me young. I'm really happy here.
You look young.
Thank you.
I'm aging and you're not. And it's
You look just the same.
Would you recommend, just because you spoke with passion about how much you like your job, if 1% of the people listening are thinking about going into admissions as a career, what would you say to that 1%?
I would say do it. I would say it is a very rewarding career. You're helping students get to their dream, getting to that next step, starting their careers. And I really find admissions fascinating. There's so much that goes into it, data, marketing. It really kind of pulls on a lot of strength. And I really find that I'm really happy the way it all worked out for me.
I bet you, if I had to bet, someone who listens to this, to our talk, will someday be a dean of admissions.
I bet.
How have the applicants changed over the last 20 years?
It's hard for me to say. Like, I think what's changed the most is the process. I remember carrying files and files of applications around in big bags.
Black boxes is how we did
it. To my car, taking them home on the weekends. And so the students are very similar, right? Like, I think maybe they've gotten a little bit more clear on what their goals are when they're applying now. I think they've had a lot of help along the way, either from pre-law advisors, other organizations like your company, helping them kind of guide them. I think admissions people are very open and spending time with them. So they're putting together really strong applications. Not that they weren't before, they just seem much more detailed. But I really think it's the process. Moving everything online was amazing. And in the last year and a half, all the stuff we've done virtually that we used to do in person.
Right.
Those evolutions have been quite interesting, I think, in my 20 plus years of doing all this.
It's interesting to hear that the applications are more detail oriented. Obviously, the information available versus when you and I started 22 years ago is just extraordinary.
Exactly. And I think you just get a lot more information.
Right. What was interesting to me was when I used to read files on your side of the table, there was almost never a perfect application. They all had like tiny minor flaws. It didn't matter, you know, a period outside the quotation marks versus inside had zero bearing on whether we admitted the person or not. But I do remember thinking to myself when I started the firm, one practical notion is most applications are flawed in some way. But are you saying they're much more polished now?
I do agree with you that there could be a typo or something, and those happen. I encourage students to try to put together the best application they can. But I think what stands out is when someone doesn't, because so many of them are so strong and so organized. So when someone has really not put forth the effort to put together a good application, it just rises to the top. Or should I say rises to the bottom?
To the bottom, yeah, floats down to the bottom. Just so we don't panic our listeners, one or two or three small typos, not a big deal.
It happens. Does it keep you from getting into the University of Chicago Law School? No. But do spend some time, because lawyers get paid for proofreading and for writing. So just do your best.
That's sort of how I would think of it too. We mentioned how going virtual last cycle was historically challenging for applicants. I know it was challenging for law schools too. And I think sometimes people lose sight of that, but it was certainly challenging in so many ways for applicants. I don't really feel like revisiting last cycle. I've done so many podcasts on it. But what do you think about this cycle? What are your predictions? I know my predictions.
I think given the early information that we're getting, like how many people are taking LSATs or the interest that we're seeing on our website, I think it's going to be up again, if not at the same level as the last cycle or higher, is my prediction.
What about the LSAT distribution? Last year, it was inorganic. As you know, you saw it better than anyone. At 170, the 174, it was up 56%, over 100% at the 175 and above.
Yeah. I mean, that was all very interesting. I mean, that's what made last cycle something new for us to kind of dive into. But we spent a lot of time looking at the data from LSAC, monitoring it, and we'll see what happens now as they change the format of the LSAT.
I can't wait to see that distribution for the August test, how it plays out.
I know. It's going to be interesting. But I have to say this. I mean, LSAC did a tremendous job pivoting to their online test and adjusting to the circumstances brought on by the pandemic. I think they kept the applicant pool out there. And the fact that we are up 33% is interesting. So I commend LSAC for pivoting like they did, because some of the other tests just didn't manage.
You alluded to something I have complimented them numerous times on, the 2.5 month pivot online. You also even touched upon something I hadn't even thought about. If they hadn't done that, I mean, that thing could have been shut down and it would have just been a year of GPA with no LSAT scores. I think there were second generational problems for how quickly they had to. It's not their fault. They had to go online. The distribution was the result of second generational problems. 5-section tests to 3-section tests, state-dependent learning, taking it at home. But the first generational issue, they solved 100%, which is they had to do it and they did it.
It saved the application cycle.
Yeah, that's a fair point.
So we'll see how this cycle goes. I'm excited. There's always something new to learn. And we just really watch the data. That's right. One thing I've learned probably the most in the last 5 or 6 years is how much the data plays into this. You know, looking at things, looking at the big picture. So my dean's a PhD in economics, so he loves the data.
Who's your dean now?
Tom Miles. He's been on our faculty. Yeah. He just started his second term.
I knew Saul your dean way years back. Right?
He's still here. Yeah. Saul's still in the building. He's great.
Okay. So if last cycle was a 10 out of 10 competitive, are you willing to wager a guess on what number that is going to be for this cycle, this coming cycle?
I just feel because last cycle was so big and competitive, it's going to continue for a bit. Okay. I think it's going to be competitive.
I gave it an 8.5 for the cycle, but I'm just plucking that number.
Why'd you go down 1.5? What do you think's happening?
I've seen the curve look distributed normally for 21 of 22 years. My only data point that the weird distribution at the tail end was last year. So I think they're going to tighten up the curve. And I think they didn't account for things like less anxiety taking it alone at home versus a room of 30 crowded people. I think they didn't account for state-dependent learning, studying in your home bedroom, taking in your home bedroom. I think they didn't quite account for turning a 5-section test into a 3-section test. I know it's 4 sections now. So I think all that's going to tighten the curve a little bit. So I do think the number of applicants is probably going to be very similar, at least from the early data, as you allude to. But I think the curve might not be so many people 170 to 180, if that makes sense.
Yeah, we'll just have to see. Like I said, that's what makes every cycle a little different. So I'm reading applications and everything, you know, application goes live September 1. Every cycle is a little different. That's another reason what I love about my job. It's not mundane and it changes.
100%. Every cycle is different. But maybe something that's pretty consistent is, and this is a question we get all the time, our listeners wanted me to ask you, when is sort of like the early period to get your application submitted in? When is like regular and when would you consider late?
I think early applications are those that get in before November, before Thanksgiving. I think getting things in before Thanksgiving, I would consider early. Like I said, our application goes live September 1. I always am anxious to see how many people apply on that day.
Of course.
But in September and October, we're recruiting. We're doing all our recruiting events. And majority of it will be virtual again. But back before the pandemic, we were traveling all over. So there was no time to really start the reading. So I think that would be early, before Thanksgiving.
Right.
And then I think between Thanksgiving and January 1 is mid-level and middle of January. And then I think as you start approaching the deadline, it just gets a little tighter, obviously.
Right.
And I think it's just to your benefit to be in those early groups. We review applications in the order that they're completed.
So small ball here, you sort by date stamp.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, that's interesting. Just for the listener's sake, this is one school. There are other schools that sort in different ways. And the reason why I want to fine point on this for a second is sometimes people apply in September and they'll see that people who applied in November, October, November, December got earlier decisions than they did. This happens every cycle. I wish I could like stamp it on my forehead to help people. And they're wondering why they applied in September and people are here who applied in December. And because a lot of schools don't sort by date stamp, they sort by different LSAT, GPA.
Right.
Obviously, the file has to be completed. I know you know all this.
It's just basically all date driven.
Yeah, it's interesting. How do you set medians? I know how you get medians. How do you set target medians?
A couple of things. You know, working with the data, looking at the prior cycles, looking at what we know of the current cycle, and then talking with the admissions committee and the dean and trying to see if we can stick to it. That's really how we do it. We want to see what everything's looking like. I'm sure you say this to your clients all the time. It's more than just the numbers. We're fortunate at Chicago. Last year, I think it was over 6,500 applications. So we can go beyond test scores and GPAs. But you do set those medians to just kind of help gauge how the cycle is going to go and where you hope to end the class.
One of the interesting phenomena about competitive cycles is schools actually tend to lock in their medians a little earlier, and then they have a little bit more bandwidth and breadth to take those people who they really like, who they read. Those 6,500 files, there's going to be, I don't know, 5,500, whatever the number is, that you just really like. And during competitive cycles, in some sense, you're given more leeway to admit some of those folks.
Exactly. So we'll see. But that's kind of how we set those medians. Our medians don't change considerably.
Well, your GPA is really sky high, and I'm guessing that's something that's very important to your institution.
Yeah, you can get those correlation studies, and the test score is one thing, but the GPA is something that that student, the applicants worked on for their 4 years of college, right? 5 years of college. And it kind of says a lot. the GPA kind of gives you a lot of information. You know, you have their majors, you have what else were they doing while they were in school. And the nice thing is, you know, about medians, half the class is above, half the class is below. So I like to talk in ranges. But our GPA, you know, I think emphasis on the GPA is just more reflective of what else we're learning from the GPA.
Yeah. What is your GPA range generally?
Our median, I think last year was a 3.89, but the range was probably down to a 3.2 to over a 4.0.
Okay. I think that's going to surprise some people. I think there's probably this thought out there that if you're under a 3.4, you have zero chance at Chicago. And I hate the concept of someone thinking zero chance.
I don't want them thinking zero chance, because it's really, that's why I always publish our ranges. Because right. I just want applicants to understand there's not a computer telling me who to admit.
Right, right.
You know, if we were going to be so tight on the numbers, there'd be a computer program doing my job.
Yes, the dean of admissions is not the admissions bot.
Right.
Okay. Merit aid, is that evaluated differently? How is it decided on?
So that's another holistic review, right? You know, we tell our applicants that once they're admitted, their file gets automatically considered for scholarship. And you don't have to fill out an additional application. And, you know, it's just looking for the holistic information and who we think would be a strong candidate here. We're very lucky to have our Rubenstein Scholars, which is our full tuition with a stipend.
That's what I was about to say. I was with you, and the last time I saw you in Colorado, which was years ago, you had the good fortune of being able to, you were at a Starbucks coffee and I came down to meet you and you had just given out a couple of Rubenstein.
So right. Because I was, those are great. We're making quite an investment in those students. The scholarship, you know, we try to make it work for people financially. It's an investment that they're making, right? And we're making an investment into them. And so the scholarshiping, though, is a holistic, you know, another review that happens.
Some sense, I always think of it as more holistic. At least when I was in admissions, take Vanderbilt, for example. We had a version of your full scholarship, which was the John Wade Scholar. But we only gave out we offered 18 to get six because everyone was admitted to Chicago, Harvard, Yale, et cetera, in that small group. Everyone's numbers were 175 plus and 3.9 plus. So the numbers didn't differentiate at all at that level. So it was just what about this person? Have they overcome?
Right.
Or, exactly. So to me, it was even more holistic.
No, I agree.
Another reason to polish up your application.
Right.
Something I talk about a lot is professional persistence. And what I mean by that is it's really good to stay in touch with the admissions office over time, because when you get to that point where the medians are shored up, it's nice for them to know your name. But you have to really, I have this stupid analogy, and if you can come up with a better one for me, good gracious, I'll use it. I think of this Revolutionary War ship, and it has 8 cannonballs. For some reason, they only have 8.
Okay.
And the other ship is it comes into sight 500 yards away. Yeah, fire one cannonball, but don't fire all 8 when it's 500 yards away. Wait for it to get closer, fire another. Wait for it to get closer or fire your third. In other words, space out your points of contact. Visit, but then don't send 3 follow-up emails and a letter of continued interest. Space that stuff out. How would you sort of titrate that sort of...
I think that's absolutely what needs to happen. Space it out. And remember that you're not the only one that is working with an admissions office, right? And so just make sure you keep the contact professional and providing new information. Don't just send me a note saying that you're still on the wait list and you want to know that I'm still interested.
Right.
Add a little bit more. What were you doing this summer? That might not be in an updated resume, but it's definitely spacing it out. You don't want to be known in the admissions office as someone that's reaching out every week. That just doesn't bode well. And we all talk. They'll tell me if there's someone that's been unprofessional or reaching out too many times.
Right.
Right. So I think that's excellent advice, spacing it out and being thoughtful in what you're saying and why you're reaching out.
I think that as a whole, applicants probably don't realize the percentage of people that are just pinging you all every week. And they're not, I thought long and hard about this. They don't mean to be doing it. 6 out of 7 days, impulse regulation is winning. But there's a 7th day where you have these high achieving people saying, I can be proactive and determine my outcomes. And there's such a thing as being way too proactive in the process.
Right. I think there's a balance here. And we're looking for students that are ultimately going to be lawyers. So we need to see that they have a level of professionalism to starting.
Right.
And are able, you know, to handle their communication in an appropriate way.
That's a good way of putting it. Do you have a crazy story that we have a blog on our website about our craziest admission stories? You know, a lot of people at our firm.
Right.
We each have some stories, you know, person waiting for you in the dark parking garage, or they show up at your house. Do any come to mind?
So if there's this one, and this is before we went all online applications, and, you know, you were getting mail and you were opening up envelopes. This applicant wrote the personal statement on the back of a shoe in order to get their foot in the door.
Right, I knew that was coming.
And so I was like, what? Because again, this is not the time to be creative or adding a ton of humor, because it's a professional school. And I think the shoe just kind of always comes to mind when asked that question, because it was so crazy.
I got a shoe when I was at Vanderbilt too.
Did you?
Yeah, I
guess from the same applicant.
But it didn't come affixed with a personal statement. I'll tell you, I'm going to regret telling you the story. I really am, because I don't think props ever work. But I also hate the word ever. So I'll tell you the one time that I really appreciated it. An applicant sent an application with an Uno card on her personal statement. It was the Uno, which is a card game for.
Right. Oh, yeah, I've played.
It was the wild card. And the personal statement was about how she used to play with her grandparents. And as a child, she was afraid to use the wild card because she didn't understand that it was always going to get put back in the deck. So she thought if she ever got it, she would never get it again. So that was her, like, okay, I'm going to use it for the first time in my life after never having used it. That's just another example of you could do something the right way and the wrong way. And it probably had something to do with the way she worded her personal statement. It wasn't overly assertive. It didn't come across as a prop. It just came across as, this is a really meaningful thing to me, so I'm going to include it.
Exactly. I mean, just hearing your story, to use it as a way to tie in. And you got to know a little bit about her, right? She played Uno with her grandparents.
I remember her name to this day. This is 20 years ago. That's how that stood out. Now, Chicago Law is going to get 75 Uno cards this year. So I just.
They're going to have to somehow figure out how to upload them.
Yeah, good point. We'll do the flip side of the endearing story. Do you have any pet peeves? For example, you know Karen Buttonbaum, one of my business partners, very well.
Yes.
If Karen were still at Harvard Law, she would not admit someone. I'm not kidding, because she brings this up all the time. If they use the word hone in their personal statement, she literally would just deny them. I don't think she would even look at their numbers.
Yeah.
Do you have any like pet peeves?
The quotes at the top of the personal statement just kind of get under my skin a little bit. I'm not saying I haven't admitted someone who starts their personal statement with a quote, but unless it's your quote,
right.
It's not a personal statement about you. That kind of gets to me a little bit. And I think when they're trying to personalize the personal statement, you do not have to do this for Chicago, but they insert the school name.
Right.
And they get the wrong school. And it happens. It's a cut and paste, search and find error. But again, the attention to detail is important. And I'm like, come on, buddy, get it right.
Yeah, the wrong school thing was a big one. I remember denying a lot of those people when I was at Vanderbilt. All my life, I've wanted to go to Duke. Okay, so you either don't care enough about Vanderbilt to double check, or you're so overconfident you don't think it matters, is how my mind interprets.
Exactly.
I have a couple of weird ones. I don't like it when people qualify the word unique because it's a binary word. Something can't be very unique or kind of unique. And if I were reading files, I see that almost every day. Someone will tweet something. Oh, I have this very unique story. Well, no, it's just unique. The other one, tell me if this annoys you. The other one is when someone will email me and they won't include their time zone. Well, it's a global economy. Like, okay, we can talk on the phone at 1 p.m., but is that New Zealand time? Do I need to be awake at 3 a.m.?
Right. I think that gets annoying when you don't know exactly the time zones. Because you're right, we're communicating with people all over the country. So I have to sometimes remind myself, Central time, Mountain time.
Yeah, I mean, these are little things. They just add up. When you've been doing admissions for a long while, sometimes there's little things that start getting on your nerves when you see them all the time.
Exactly.
I do think the idea about I never even see a reason to put a school name in there. Why risk it?
I agree. And you don't have to. If you're applying to Chicago, I assume you're going to want to go to Chicago.
Right, exactly. So speaking of that, what's your favorite thing about Chicago Law School?
You know, it's crazy that I've been here as long as I have. A few things. Can I say three things?
Sure, you can say 300.
First, it's our faculty. I mean, our faculty are so engaged with their students. not just in the classroom, but outside the classroom. Having them over for dinner, going out for drinks. It's just like kind of this, they're really here to teach. And you can just see it. I say this till I'm blue in the face, and you really have to see it in action. I think they're great. I think we bring in really interesting students from all over the country that it might be their first time in Chicago, the city of Chicago. I just love seeing students, you know, it's getting close to orientation. We have orientation for us starts September 9th, and it'll be fun to have the students in the building and seeing them and just knowing they're starting their careers. And our students really, I find them very engaged as well, working with each other, working with the community, working with the faculty. And so I really appreciate who we get to come to Chicago. And then finally, it's being part of the University of Chicago, being on the main campus with the rest of the university and everything that comes with that. Students able to take classes in other divisions and go to lectures, interacting with the different graduate students. So the campus is just a fun and engaged campus.
I'm going to regret saying this because some other dean of admissions is going to listen and hate me. Chicago is the only big city I could live in.
There's a lot going on, and it's a beautiful city from the architecture to being on a lake.
Right.
Another dean of admission and I always argue. She doesn't agree that we have beaches, but we do have sandy beaches.
I've run on them.
It is a great city.
Yeah, I guess if Boston is defined as a big city, I could live in Boston. But that's it, man. I'm not a city person. You have a wonderful city. I love visiting your campus. It's been a while.
Yeah.
But I do love it when I get to go to the law school.
We'll swing by.
Do you still have that reflective pool at the front?
Yeah.
Okay. Yep. I'll swing by and I'll jump in that. Well, I still might apply to Chicago Law School, so never mind. I'm not going to jump into the pool. Would that be a character and fitness issue or no?
No. And it's really kind of become like graduation. All the students kind of stand in the reflecting pool.
Okay.
Part of their end of the year photo, end of their career photo.
What would be a character and fitness issue that's borderline keeping someone in or out? And what would be a hard no?
That's an interesting question. I think if there's academic dishonesty, I think if there's multiple character and fitness, like 3, 4, then there's a pattern forming that kind of gives us some pause. But I think the academic dishonesty is a problem.
And I think there's gradients there because I have seen a lot of the, look, I was in a lab of 4 people.
Exactly.
Right. Like, it was a lab class and we all submitted the same thing. We didn't know it was against policy. And
right. But then when there's pretty verified plagiarism.
Yeah, agree. I do think that to relieve some of our listeners, the typical character and fitness thing, which you've seen for 20 plus years of your career, one open container, or you were having a loud party in your dorm, those things don't even, correct me if I'm wrong, but they don't even like, you see one of those and you just turn the page. It's just it's so tiny.
Right. You see one of those, but when you start seeing 3, 4, 5 of those in one college career, that takes a lot to get caught 5 times.
What if I had 3 loud parties spaced out over 4 years? Would that be sort of an open door close? I'm actually curious now.
I mean, wouldn't close the door. That wouldn't close the door, but
why is this guy so loud?
Right. There's a couple ways you could see that, but I don't think that's going to keep you from Chicago at all.
Yeah. I mean, when you're talking about systemic, I can now think back to like 16 speeding tickets. Well, 3 speeding tickets, sure, whatever. You're in a hurry.
Right.
Me too, kid. 16, and you're like, what is going on in your life?
Exactly. Like, that's where you kind of question what else is going on in this person's world.
Right.
That might not make law school the right next step for them.
Yep. Systemic patterns are things that I know most schools look at. I know we're almost at our time cutoff, and I know you're busy, so I want to thank you for your time.
Oh, my pleasure, Mike. It's always good to see you.
Yeah. We'll catch up in that reflective pool when I'm in Chicago next.
And I'll get back out to Colorado.
Thank you. I'd love to see you. Any final words for people applying this cycle?
You know, I just like to remind students to follow every school's instructions. Don't assume one thing. If you have a question, get the answer. You know, we have a lot of good information on our website, on our UChicago Law Welcome Center for applicants that will give you a lot of tips. And so just spend your time putting together your application. Don't leave it for the day before you want to hit submit. Put in the effort because you're starting your legal career with this application.
Yeah. I always say don't give an arbitrary date. I'm going to be done by October 15th. Be done when you have a really good application.
Exactly.
You're it might not, be October 13th, but it might be November 1. That's not going to make a difference.
My team is, we're ready to read applications, but we want it to be the best it can be.
Yeah.
You're putting forth your strongest effort.
I'll pay you a compliment. I've seen you read applications. I know you get excited with everyone. That's probably pretty rare. I've seen you excitedly at Starbucks plowing
right.
through applications.
Yeah, so. It is a fun job. I come back to that. I really feel fortunate to have found this career.
Yeah, it's good to see you. Thank you.
Great to see you.
We'll catch up again in person soon.
Yeah, for sure. All right.